Mississauga 960 AM presents The Spin, covering the human side of sports, music, and today's news from Mississauga, the GTA, and beyond. And now, please welcome your host, Barry Davis.
Well, this... Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Spin. Barry and Michelle Storino with you here on a Monday afternoon, a beautiful sunny Monday afternoon, and the snow is back.
That's okay. It's short-lived, though.
Yeah, let's hope it's short-lived. We've got a great show coming up for you today. On the show, we're going to be joined by Liz Knox, who is a goaltender currently in the CWHL. However, the league is about to fold, which is a sad, sad thing. Barry Davis, Michelle Storino with you. I can hear myself clear now. Yes. It is a day that is not a good one for women's hockey, and it's very disappointing, the news that the league is going to be shutting down. Michelle, there's two women's hockey leagues, right? Let our listeners know what the deal is, because again, it's the CWHL deciding that they're going to discontinue operations. And to talk more on it, we're going to talk to Liz Knox, who is a goaltender who plays in the league. Liz, I wish we were talking to you under better circumstances today. What can you tell us from your point of view on this happening? Like, did you guys have any inkling that this was going to happen?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all, and, you know, I agree. I wish we were under better circumstances, but, you know, like, from the players' perspective, I mean, we were completely blindsided by the announcement, and, you know, it's taken, you know, a day and a half now to kind of really understand what that means for us, but some stuff we have to work through for sure.
You know, Liz, when it comes to, I guess, the NHL and their support of the CWHL, they're between a rock and a hard place, I believe, because there are the two leagues. Do you think this was potentially a step of trying to get the two teams merged and on the same page into one league so that there can be some NHL backing?
I mean, from where I sit, you know, there doesn't seem to be anything in place as of yet. So I don't know that it was a completely strategic way, but I do know that, or I have faith in at least, that the move was made kind of out of the consensus that what we've been doing and how we've been doing it for the last 12 years maybe has worked in the short term, but in the long term, there's got to be a better business model for us. So, you know, if the NHL feels pressure as a result of that, you know, maybe that's a good thing for us, but in terms of it being a strategic move, I think it was more of a move out of the way and just say, okay, like, somebody else has got to step in here and do better.
So, Liz, what is the plan now for all the women that are playing in the league? Like, where do you guys go from here? Is there a way you can fight this? Can you appeal? Is there anything you can do?
Well, I kind of feel like we've already lost it all, and I think that nobody's super keen to go back to something that, you know, wasn't really sustainable. So our next move basically is to try to make an allegiance and an alliance of pro women's hockey players in North America, you know, with the inclusion of some players from overseas, and basically, you know, get a sense of the state of women's hockey right now and where we're at and where do we want to be going. And that's completely separate from any of the leagues that we've played in or organizations that we've played for. It's just a matter of us as players saying, okay, where do we sit right now? And we are really, you know, at the end of the day, we're the product that's on the ice. So where do we want to be and who do we need to contact? Who do we need to make business with to make that happen?
Liz, who have you been able to reach out and talk to over the last 24 to 48 hours after all of this occurred?
I'll be really honest with you. It's been mostly media.
Oh.
And that's okay. It, like I said, we are very unprepared for this. So I have been in strong contact with the players on our Players Association and players off of it. Definitely players on both the Canadian national team and the U.S. national team. So my primary contact right now has been players and the media. And I think the biggest thing for me is making sure that we're on the same page before we start to make those connections with the governing bodies in hockey and the hockey stakeholders, because if we're not in this together, you know, it's going to go in a million different directions. And I just don't want to see it happen that way.
So with that being said, have you reached out to anybody in the NWHL as well?
Yep. We've had conversations with their Players Association, and, you know, it's just a conversation at this time, and it's of no threat to their players or to their organizations. It's simply a matter of just talking. And, you know, I spoke with Anya, who's one of their heads, and she basically said, you know, we feel for you guys, and we know that you all want to play hockey and we all want a place to play. So we're just kind of having those preliminary conversations right now.
We're joined by Liz Knox. And Liz, I mean, the hockey itself, there's no issues there, right? I mean, this is a strong league as far as the players go, as far as the quality of the game goes, right? Is this all just because of stuff that's going on behind the scenes?
It really is. And, you know, I hope that people that are listening and people that are, you know, tuning in throughout the next couple weeks and months really understand that women's hockey is at the best it's ever been in terms of the product on the ice. And the amount of mutual respect between our players north and south of the border and overseas. To give you an example, I mean, Team Canada and Team USA met yesterday in Helsinki before they're going to tear each other apart on the world stage, just in the interest of women's hockey and our future. So
wow.
The game has really come so far. The product is better than it's ever been. I do believe that. I believe that what it was in the CW and what it is in the NW. And that's kind of what, you know, the foundation that we're building this movement on is, okay, we have the product and we need somebody who's going to sell us.
Absolutely.
And won't this, I mean, by this league shutting down, does that in some ways almost ruin all the good that's been done for you guys? I mean, all the progress that's been made with the quality of hockey, with the recognition of the league, with the fan awareness, with everybody starting to catch on with this, it just seems to me like a stab in the back right now.
It certainly hurts. But the interesting thing is that people who are fans of the CWHL are fans of the players and are fans of the coaches and the GMs and the people that they meet on a, you know, on a personal basis. And I've talked to teammates and I've had another number of people reach out to me and just say, you know, we believe in you guys. You know, our daughters depend on you and we want to see you succeed. So the fans of women's hockey aren't going anywhere. But at the same time, you know, we're pretty keen to give them a product again. And I know that they'll be keen to receive us. So it hurts right now. And you say stab in the back. It does hurt. But I'm choosing to see this as if you're not in, you're in the way. And if the CWHL was in the way of us, you know, progressing our game, then that's the step we have to take.
Well, good on you. All I have to say is that, you know, even if you're having just preliminary talks, it's not just preliminary talks. You're doing your best to get the word out and get the conversation going. And that's really the main thing. You want to get this conversation going because you guys have worked so hard to increase and just better the product on the ice. And like you said, I mean, after the Olympic Games and just, yeah, it was heartbreaking to see Canada lose the way they did. However, that was probably one of the greatest, like, gold medal games that you could watch, like, in any sport, you know? So, I mean, you are doing this, obviously, for a fantastic reason, and these are the right steps to be taking. However, can I ask you a little bit about, did you perhaps get an inkling that maybe something was going to potentially go awry in November when the league lost one of its, you know, major contributors?
Yeah, it's tough for us to comment on that because we're largely not privy to that information of what happens on the board and what happens in our business model and those relationships that, you know, form and fall apart up there. So as players, I mean, you know, we saw the press release and we saw comments from both sides. And like I say, it's really, we're in a difficult situation that way, in that as much as we control, you know, the state of women's hockey as what you see on the ice, it's been largely out of our hands until now.
Liz, is the opportunity there for many of the players to go over to the NWHL, or is there just not enough spots, not enough teams, obviously, to give everyone work?
Yeah, I think there's a number of problems with our players moving to the NWHL. I mean, first of all, like you say, there's a limited number of teams. We have 25 national team players that are representing our countries at on the world stage right now. So there's 25 spots that will automatically be given up to those players if everybody was to go. You know, and then you have another handful of, 50 players that are also competitive at that level and very well could be in there. So numbers-wise, it's tough, and it's tough to see it surviving. And then strategically for me, as somebody, if I take my player hat off and I'm moving myself away and looking at the bigger picture for women's hockey, part of me thinks that moving to the NWHL would be a step sideways. And for our girls, we've just lost everything. So we're starting with nothing again. And once you've lost everything, you have the opportunity to gain everything. And I'm not confident that going to the NWHL would give us that opportunity. I think it would give us a place to play, certainly. But for how many more years, I'm not sure.
In terms of, the number one message that you want to send to all young female athletes, regardless of if they play hockey or not, what would be that message to them today?
I think it was encapsulated perfectly. We have a player from the Toronto Furies who came back this year after giving birth. And, she put out this very, poignant kind of almost poem and basically said, we came back to this league and we've rebuilt this league to, provide role models for young women, young people in general, to show that we're strong and that, we won't fold under pressure, and to give them somewhere to witness unity when we're succeeding and also in times of struggle. And she finished that point by saying, we came back for you and we're going to continue to come back for those little girls.
Liz, and I really love the fact that, you guys are not giving up the fight. You're not just bowing down and saying, oh, well, I guess we're going to have to do something else. Because, as I said, you guys have worked just so bloody hard to get to where you are. It's one of those things where you don't want to go down without a fight.
That's exactly it. And we don't even honestly necessarily see ourselves as going down right now. I think we have a clean slate. And we have a lot of great people in place and a lot of great opportunity ahead of us. And now we just have to, take slow, strategic next steps and make sure that we build a solid foundation to, build our next on.
Liz, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us today. We wish you nothing but the best, and we'll be pulling for you guys because I love the fact that you guys have had this league, and I love what you've done with it and raising awareness and getting young girls to want to do this and play hockey at a high level. All the best, Liz. Thank you so much. Well, it's time for Building with Bennett, as we do each and every Monday here. And I got to give you credit, Mr. Damon Bennett. Last week, you joined us, and you were sick as a dog with the flu or something.
Absolutely.
And now here you are playing hurt again with some weird gallbladder thing.
This is what happens as you get older. I can't even believe I'm admitting this on radio, but as we get older, things start happening. So, I got a bit of a gallbladder attack and literally knocked me out for 2 days. So I was supposed to work all week.
So does this mean next week you're going to be joining us from a hospital bed post-gallbladder surgery or something?
Well, I'm hoping it's not getting worse at this point. So if, I'm always there for you, Bear. So if I have to do this interview from a hospital bed, I will do it for you, man. Well, I love you.
Well, that goes both ways, Damon. And it kind of segues nicely into what I want to talk about today because as our bodies get old, sometimes they fall apart. But sometimes it's not that they're old, it's that we're not taking care of them properly. And
big time.
In my basement, in my home studio, I had a lovely shelf put up.
Yeah, yeah.
And on that shelf, all I really had were a bunch of baseball hats and a few baseballs to look really nice when we videotape things. But above that is a little window. And my cat loves to look in that window. So he would constantly use that shelf as a step to get up into the window. Now, we used thick anchors, and it seemed to be very solid. But last week, as the cat was jumping up to the window, as it hit the shelf, the whole shelf came down with the cat.
So cats cause more damage. I'm telling you, we've got a couple ourselves, and the damage they can do just by living their lives, Barry, is unbelievable. Now, how big is your cat? First of all, let's go there.
Well, he's a large cat.
He's a big one, right?
He likes to eat. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So here's a really, really good tip for people that are doing things like this. Basements. We're talking about basements a lot because this is where people are building. I'm about to do yet another one, probably about the 400th job I've ever done in my life in a basement. Now, people love that extra space, right? So little tips on hanging stuff off your walls, especially in a basement, because, you know, upstairs, we do the proper framing. We do everything else to support this stuff. But what do we do when it's already a finished basement? Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Now, if it's something that you really care about, if you're going to put up a shelf and you're going to put up, let's say, your Oscar that you won last year at the Academy Awards.
Thank you very much, by the way, for that.
No worries at all. So, you know, you want to hang that. You don't want it to fall. You don't want it to break and dent because I'm sure the cost of fixing that would be expensive. So here's what I do. I cut out the actual drywall. And what I do is I cut it out from stud to stud. What I place in between the studs is a 3/4-inch piece of plywood. Now, people are thinking, am I really going to do this? Am I really going to go above and beyond and put in plywood behind walls and everything? It depends what you're hanging, right? So this is what I do is I put a piece of 3/4-inch plywood in between both studs. I glue it, and then I screw it into the frame of the studs. I then take out that piece of drywall that I just cut out. I put it back on the wall, screw it in, and then you have a proper backing for hanging whatever you want. And I guarantee no matter how big that cat is, he's not going to break it. Now, we can talk about brackets all day long and plugs. Now, there is a multitude of plugs out there. I prefer butterfly clips, which is basically a screw that goes into your wall, opens up into a flange in behind your drywall, and it actually gives it a bigger surface to grab onto for any weight that's sitting on it, because most drywall plugs are what? It's a little screw you put in and you put that little yellow plug into the wall, and that's and people think you can hang anything you want off it. Well, you can't. You really got to look at the ratings of the weight ratings of each plug, and it's a science like everything else. It's not something you just run to your door and say, this is the one I'm going to use. You really got to take a look at the material you're buying.
And the other thing too is, in a perfect world, you're putting those into the studs. And if you don't do what you just said, especially here in my basement, there's areas where I can see where the hole is, where it came out, and there's nothing. Like, it's just drywall.
Exactly.
And you could I'm thinking you could have the strongest support in the world, the strongest thing to put in the screw. But if you're just putting in a drywall, there's nothing that's going to support it on the other end, right?
Absolutely. So the baseball hats was fine for what you probably used, Bear, but as soon as that cat started using it as a ladder, that's when it was starting to fail, right? So it's just like every building material. You need to really look at what's going to hold it or what's potentially going to happen there, and use the right hardware. Now, your eyes cross when you walk into Home Depot or any of the big box stores, right? You're like, oh my God, look at this wall of plugs. Which ones do I pick? Take a look. It's where you start reading things. Now, men, and I'm gonna generalize on this, men don't read directions, right? We don't ask for directions.
Oh, no, it's so true. I don't check dates on food when I shop either, right?
Exactly. We're all like that, right? We go in and we just start, looking around. Oh, this one looks like it'll work. You don't ask for any recommendations. We'll start looking at the fine details. And this is something I push my crew to do as well. When you're installing something, when you're using whether it's concrete mix or anything like along those lines, you want to read the bloody directions because otherwise you could void your warranty on it as well, right? So really taking a look at what you're buying, just like a car, like you would a car or a house or anything, you really want to do a little bit of that research just to make sure. I mean, a shelf's a shelf, but it depends what you're putting on, right?
Yes, sir. We are building with Bennett here, as we do every Monday on The Spin. And Damon, I sent you a couple of pictures of what my wall looks like now. And so basically the shelf took chunks of the wall out. And they're like, and it's split. So what would be my first course of trying to repair this?
So repair it. And okay, this is an easy one. Now you're talking about a little screw hole, right? And actually that's a really good question, Bear, because it's the small things that people, they're still not sure how to fix. They take some spackle out and just cover the hole. Well, it depends on the size of the hole. If it's about an inch in diameter, what you can do is just put a piece of mesh over it and put some plaster right over top of that as the first coat. Build it out a little bit. After it dries, you can sand it down a little bit. coat to skim it out, smooth out your lines, sand it to perfection once it's dry, and then you can paint over top of it with a primer and a paint. That's the easy one. Now, if it's just a dent in your wall, that's even easier. That's when you can use spackle. That's when you can take out the spackle. You know, you can just fill that little dent in the wall. And that's what I do a lot of times. If there's a screw hole in the wall, all I do is I take the end of my trowel, I dent into the drywall. I don't bust a hole. I just dent that drywall and fill it with spackle. That way you can sand it down and then paint it to perfection. So those are good little tips for people who are just, you know, puttering around in the basement or in the house, you know, just trying to hang stuff, or if they're trying to repair stuff. And, you know, as long as you're staying away from structure, as long as you're staying away from the three big trades, you can do anything to your house you want, caulking as well.
Okay, so let's say we've done that. I've, you know, sanded it, and now I'm painting it. Damon, will it look obvious where the fresh paint is compared to where the wall was painted prior?
I got to be honest, it all depends. And I'm going to say yes, because you can do your best. But what you're doing is, okay, so we use a lot of eggshell in our homes, eggshell paint, right? Because it gives you that little bit of texture and hides any deficiencies. And it's a very, very common paint. I think I use it almost 90% of my homes. So when you're all of a sudden smoothing out a patch and you're actually putting some new compound on that and sanding it, it is definitely going to be a different texture. Now, you can repaint with eggshell paint, obviously, to try and get that texture back, but it's going to take some layers. So I'll give you an example here. I'm working on a 120-year-old home now that's had some work done in the past, and you can definitely see where they tied in. They did a beautiful job, but you're never going to get away from looking like that was a patch. Now, you know, it all depends. You could repaint your whole wall. You could skim your wall if you want. That's too much work. But really, you don't notice it unless you're in certain lights. So am I going to lie to you and say you'll never see it again? Absolutely not. You will always see it.
Now, I love this idea you have about literally cutting the drywall out, putting in the plywood, and then putting the drywall back. So
yes.
What do you need tool-wise to cut the drywall out? Because it's not heavy, right? You would think that you don't need a heavy power saw, but how do you go about doing it cleanly and not making a bigger mess? Because I know myself, and if I sat there with a steak knife and tried to cut it, I'm making a big mess.
Well, I got to be honest, and this is another good point, is that I think every homeowner should have a bag of tools. I don't think we've got to get away from this notion that only contractors should use tools. I grew up with tools in my hand. I mean, not all of my family was contractors. Most of them were, but even the ones that weren't worked on their own homes, and they always had a little bag of tools. So a skill saw, a drill, those are two of the basic things you will always need. So get out your skill saw, learn how to use it safely. Look at, you know, if you have to, look at YouTube videos, watch some TV shows to see how people are handling the tools. But really, don't be afraid of tools, because you need them all the time. And you're really going to call in a contractor to do a small job like that. And I'll tell you, that's the difference, right? Calling in a contractor, they have to charge you for the day, okay? Even if they're going to do a small job, that takes them out of the bigger paying jobs for the rest of that day. So they're going to upcharge you a lot more than it's going to cost you to go get the material and have a couple of tools on hand to do it yourself. So I know we're not cheap out there, right? So anything you can do yourself to save you a little bit of money, those are good tricks, man. You get yourself a bag of tools and learn how to use them.
Okay, so Damon, the shelf that I have is about 3 feet wide across, right?
Yes, but that's a long one. Yep.
But the damage on the wall goes probably about a foot and a half. So I'm thinking that I'd cut that whole section where the damage is, cut that whole section out, right? And when I pull that piece of drywall out, could I conceivably then repair that while it's out of the wall, or should I do it while it's still in the wall before I cut it out?
Are you talking about the shelf itself, or are you talking about the drywall patch?
I'm talking about the patch of drywall that I pull out and the damage that's done to it, the screw holes and the peeled off stuff. Because once I put the shelf back up, these little holes and messes, you'll still be able to see, because the shelf is just like, you know, when the shelf came down, it did more damage to the wall on the way down.
Absolutely. So what you're talking about right now is you have a line of a little bit of broken drywall from where the plugs pulled out, right?
Exactly.
If you were only you cut out that piece of drywall, if you're going to use the plywood in behind it, Bear, that's the only way. Otherwise, you can repair that. just without cutting it out yourself. But if you want to structure that shelf a little bit because your cat is, still gaining weight and he's still using that as a ladder, then absolutely cut out that piece, but keep that piece because you're going to be putting it right back in once you install that piece of plywood in the back. Then, you tape out the corners, you tape out all the seams, you mud it up. As I said before, you sand it down, put another coat on for skimming, get it to where you need it to be, then paint it up, then you put your shelf on. So it's a little bit of work, but, if that's what it takes to save the cat and, the Oscar, as I said, that's the way to go.
Now, if you don't want to go through the whole plywood thing, and I clean up my wall, I patch it up, it looks nice, and I want to reinstall the shelf, how do I know the best place to anchor this shelf so that this doesn't happen again? Because obviously you want to have some kind of a support beam behind the drywall, yep. Right?
And if not, use more plugs than necessary. Like, that's what I would do too. Like, so as I said, I really love the butterfly clips because they go in behind and they grab a half inch of the drywall on either side of that hole right off the bat. So it's a bigger piece of drywall, which means it's going to actually have a stronger cantilever presence to it because it's going to want to grab that drywall before wanting to sag out. Whereas a plug, you put too much weight on it. It's only, you got to think about it. Drywall is only half an inch, right? So any kind of weight on a plug or anything is just going to break that drywall. Yeah. That's why you want to use the better clips.
And they're easy enough to find, right? I've seen ones that are called drywall plugs. Is that the same thing or different?
Yeah, so as I said, drywall plugs come in many different shapes and forms, right? Just like humans, right? So again, it's whatever you're doing. So for you, Bear, what I would do is I'd put in more plugs, but I'd use the butterfly clips. And that should hold the cat, especially if you're using a lot more. Like, to me, it looked like you had maybe, what, 4 or 5 screws in there? Is that right? Or
yeah.
Is there a little bit more?
Well, there were 2 screws on each side of the shelf.
Right. So on top of the plugs, though, what I'd like you to do is actually try and find a stud.
Yeah.
So whether it's, if you're already doing the drywall repair and you don't have a stud finder, it's as easy as knocking your hand on the wall until you hit some structure and do a test hole with a screw to see if you hit anything. And that way, you at least you're grabbing some kind of structure in behind there. But, it's really important. It's so funny you're even talking about this because I'm about to repair a shelf that the homeowner installed on one of the big projects I'm doing here. So I'm going up there literally to put in some plugs for a big stand-up shelf. And again, contractors use plugs. We don't always need to add structure. We use plugs constantly for, hanging toilet paper rolls, et cetera, off of walls. So, they do come in handy. Just make sure you're using the right ones.
And finally, Damon, for anyone that is drilling into their wall or putting up shelves or screwing stuff into walls, is there anything you've got to be careful of so that you're not accidentally drilling into either something electrical or something that you shouldn't be drilling through?
You and I have talked a lot, and I can tell you're already picking up on all of this stuff, buddy, because that's exactly it. You want to make sure that you're not hitting an electrical line. Stay away from the electrical boxes, okay? So most great electricians will staple it down the side of the stud. As long as you keep away from that box, you will be fine. Things happen, but you should be fine on that. Just make sure you keep away from all things electrical. But the other thing is plumbing. Now, this is a big one, and it happens all the time in bathrooms, okay? So somebody goes to put on the cement board, they put a drywall screw in, what do they hit? They miss the stud, and they hit the copper line, or they hit the PEX line.
That's not good.
And it's not good. So that's causing water damage right away. Really, what you have to know is you really have to be accurate where your stud is if you're around any electrical or plumbing, because this stuff happens all the bloody time. I've fixed many a bathroom where the original guy actually hit one of the lines and I've had to go and fix. And I've also actually had to repair electrical lines because of the same thing. Just as simple as trying to put in a drywall screw, you miss it, you hit the wire, and all of a sudden it shorts out, right? So you got to be really careful, buddy.
There is a reason why some of us don't have tools, Damon.
But if more people learned to use them and figured out how to work on their houses, Bear, we would eliminate a lot of this stuff. I really do find, and I got to be honest, there was a time where we grew up with this stuff where everyone, there was no such thing as contractors that were coming to everyone's house to fix all the small stuff. We all did it, and we've really gotten away from all that. And I know we're all busy. I keep saying it. We're all busy. But at some point, you've got to protect your investment. You've got to know how a house works and, how to fix the small stuff. Unless you have endless amounts of cash, which I know most of us don't, to hire people like me. But, learn what you can do on your own to save yourself a bit of money. And I got to be honest, the less contractors that are out there, and that's happening in the next 15 to 20 years. We're losing so many of our contractors due to retirement. There's going to be less of us. So DIY will become important, and start learning the basics on how to fix your house.
Yeah, it's kind of like people calling 911 for a head cold, right?
It totally.
Fix it yourself.
The reference I use big time is because, you know, we are really expensive and we have to charge a certain amount in order to, you know, make our ends meet at the end of the day, pay for our gas, pay for our overhead and all of that. So, you know, you get someone to come in and hang a door for you and patch a hole, you're going to be paying for that and probably not what it's going to cost you to just go do it yourself.
Or I could just give you a call and offer you a cat in return and you can fix my wall.
If I didn't have two already, buddy, I would take that offer out. But I would do anything for you for free anyway, bud. Call me anytime.
All right. Damon, thank you so much. And take care of that damn gallbladder, will you?
I'm going to try, man. Just I got to get in. But thanks again, Bear.
A little putty might help.
Got you, buddy.
Well, it's time, as we always do on Mondays, to chat with our good friend, Johnny the Bat Boy. Johnny, this week I want to ask you about when a trade is made in season. And I was inspired by a story that Travis Snyder told about how when he was traded from the Blue Jays to the Pirates, he was on the road and he literally had to just say goodbye to the team and then head to Pittsburgh. But yet he has so much stuff still in Toronto. When that happens, what happens, like, what do the clubbies do? Because there's a lot of guys that are still hanging back in Toronto, right, during road trips. So what has to be done?
It really depends on how much stuff the player has. Yeah, usually when a guy gets traded, it's pretty quick. They don't give you much time. It's, hey, you've been traded. Here are your flight details. You're going to be on the next flight out of here. And so it's a bit of a whirlwind usually. The most basic thing is I need to pack up my personal belongings and get them to my new city. So usually the clubbies, the first thing they'll do we'll get in touch with that player and just go and say, hey, you know, what do you need? What's a necessity immediately?
Johnny, we had a question and it's kind of related to this in that when players are done at the end of the season and they tip the trainers, first of all, let me bookend it with this. Is all of this stuff, whether it be gathering up the players' personal belongings or whatever that is, does that all fall within the purview of what would be considered normal trainer or team staff stuff?
Or is that above and beyond?
I think it's somewhere in between the two. I think it's sort of expected that you help the player in a situation like this. Let's be honest, the reason that we're employed is to help these players. We're there to make their lives easier, to accommodate them, to make transitioning into a new city, a new team, as easy as possible.
So, Johnny, would there be a tip expected from a player? So let's say in the case of Kendrys Morales, if this was the situation where somebody had to gather up Kendrys's personal belongings, etc., would there be a tip? Is that etiquette? Would there be a tip from Kendrys expected?
It's hard to say whether it would be expected or not. I would say that some do, some don't. I don't personally do things with the expectation of, oh, I'm expecting something. But there are situations where I have been, and there are situations where I haven't been.
Yeah, one thing that Travis Snyder said was that, and Ricky Romero kind of concurred, that you guys are kind of the unsung heroes in the clubhouse because there's so many things that you guys do that are above and beyond. And both of those guys said that they make it a priority to make sure that, you know, they tip the clubbies for what they do. You know, with a lot of jobs, whether you're, say, you're a server in a restaurant, you make a big chunk of what you're going to make in a year via tips. Do guys make pretty decent money? Are there guys that are like really good tippers and maybe some that aren't? But have you ever received a tip that you went, oh, man, this is nice?
Yeah, yeah. There's just like with anything, there are guys that are better than others. some that are significantly better than others. So it just depends. It also depends on the amount of stuff that they need, right? If a guy gets traded and he's in a pinch and he really needs stuff done yesterday and you help him out, of course he's going to be more inclined to take care of you because you're helping him out. Yeah, it's sort of like an unwritten rule in baseball that I would say 95% of the guys do.
So would there be, now again, you don't have to mention names, but would there be one person that comes to mind, Blue Jays player, that would be considered legendary in the baseball ranks when it comes to gratuities?
I don't know about legendary.
I heard Mark Burley was pretty damn good.
Yeah, but he just gave fishing rods, right?
No. No. No, I heard there was like Rolexes for all.
What?
His,
for
no.
That, not for the clubbies, but for the guys.
For the training staff?
No, for the bullpen guys or for the pitching staff or something.
Wow.
Okay, let me ask you this, and this will be the final question. Did you end up getting a robe from David Price?
I did not.
Oh, that sucks.
I did not, but I did get a scooter.
No way. Really?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll take the scooter over the robe anytime.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, and do you still have the scooter?
I do, of course.
You didn't sell it on eBay?
No.
You didn't get David Price to sign it? And then you sell
have
it?
You driven in downtown Toronto?
No, that's true. It's hey, true Johnny.
Scooter is clutch.
For appearing on our show today, Matt is going to give you
a big fat kiss on the cheek.
Yeah.
Deal?
Absolutely nothing.
He's like, I'll take the nothing. Thanks.
I will gladly take the nothing.
Johnny, talk to you next week, buddy. Marilyn calling me audibly, bawling. She said that she would never leave, continue to torture me, telling me to come with her underneath my comforter. And she brought a gun with her, pills and some rum with her. Took me on the balcony, telling me to jump with her. Yeah, I'm in the ghost. Welcome back to the spin on News Talk Saga 960. I don't know how this became the theme for Perry Lefko. Because I win the gold like
Gabby. She's just
oh, you just love this, Michelle. Perry, again, if you had any inkling as to what's going on with Michelle right now as I play this song for her, you, sir, are some kind of a freaky genius because, Perry, you gave this song to her and this turns her into a completely different woman.
What are you talking about?
Well, she is. She's a girl on fire, but you don't play that as my intro music.
Okay, we need to come up with something just for you then, Perry.
Yeah.
Well, how about Last Night from Images in Vogue?
Yeah, yeah.
Which the first song from Images in Vogue?
Which one? Which song?
Oh, come on, man. Think about it. What was the first song they played?
Yes,
the
I
biggest,
know.
Arguably their biggest. And can you hear me, by the way? Because it sounds like it's crackling.
Yeah, it does sound like it's crackling. But we are apparently sounds fine on the air. It just sounds bad on our little headphones here. But okay. As long as you can hear us, that's the good news.
Yeah. Think about a song that has love and lust in it, okay?
Yeah, Lust for Love, Images
in
Vogue.
That's what they are. Their best
yes.
song.
Perry and I were both at the Images in Vogue concert last
well,
night in Mississauga.
Whoop-de-doo. Look at you guys.
Well,
and Perry was signing autographs, okay?
Yeah, but I was signing them all Perry Lefko.
Oh.
All the best. Love, Perry. Earlier on in the show, we had Liz Knox, who is a fantastic goaltender in the CWHL. And, you know, word coming down that that league is pretty much folding. We got the opinion of a player, but from someone... you know, who covers sports. What do you make of this decision, and do you think that there's any way that they'll be able to save this league?
Let's go with the second question first, yes. It'll either be saved by the NHL, or there was a story in the Star today that there's a group out there that it chooses to remain anonymous at this time that is interested in doing something about it. So I would say that, I think there will be a season next year, but... let's be honest, when it comes to women's hockey, we all get cranked up about the Olympics. But other than that, the interest is mild. And again, that's the diehard people will go to watch these games. But if there were more people watching it, then they wouldn't have a financial crisis. So I think it's something's going to have to be done. And I'm optimistic about the future.
So, but you're optimistic about the NHL kind of stepping in. However, it's kind of been... I guess, illustrated that the league has a hard time kind of choosing between the CWHL and then the NWHL, which is mostly based out of the United States. So those are American-based teams where the CWHL is mostly Canadian-based teams. Do you see, like, a merger happening or the NHL kind of... do you think the NHL would interject and suggest some sort of a merger in order for them to actually be a part of it and actually be... a true backing of this now one unified league?
I think that's what has to happen. And the other thing, too, is if you look at the NBA and the WNBA, maybe look at that model as something that could be done, you know, for women's hockey. But, yeah, you can't have two leagues operating independently. you have to have interest, which is created by rivalries, geographical rivalries, and whatever, right? So this whole model has to be changed.
Perry, are you a big Final Four NCAA basketball guy? Because last night while we were at Classic Bowl, about ready to watch Images in Vogue, before the concert started, they had the Duke game on, and there was a guy sitting next to me, and the entire time he's watching, he's like, no, 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 Duke, no, no, no. What happened with Duke last night? Did they lose?
Mississauga's own R.J. Barrett missed a free throw.
Yeah.
Which would have tied the game, and for the last 5 seconds, they couldn't get control of the ball, so they lost the game. And this is a huge, huge upset, because two of those players are going to be drafted probably within the top three. So it's anybody who has Duke in their brackets was probably doing what that guy was doing last night.
And most people do, because Duke, even if, again, go back to the casual fan, casual fans always look, you know, at Duke and North Carolina, and those are the teams that they automatically put at the top of their brackets, right?
Yep.
But Duke was a damn good team.
Well, let me just try to put some a funny spin on it. My favorite Dukes are the Duke basketball, Lana Duke, and the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Dukes of Hazzard 100%.
We have to say it, right? Come on, but Lana Duke, come on.
How about Duke of Earl?
The Duke of Earl. Why don't you start a segment now and say my favorite things are, and it's one particular name.
Can't be John Wayne anymore because John Wayne was...
It's a Steve Simmons move, okay?
Who?
Some guy named Steve Simmons. why can't we say his name?
Oh, I don't know. I just think of the time that he ripped Jose Bautista on Twitter, and Jose retweeted and wrote back, "Who are you and why are you talking to me?"
I think that's great. If you're going to be a columnist, you better get ripped. Okay, if you're not creating controversy, you're sitting by the side and playing with whatever.
Right? Have you been ripped before? Have you ever had an athlete wanting to pound on you?
I had a trainer who once threatened to decapitate me.
Wow, that's a strong.
So if you're not making some kind of whatever sensationalism with what you're writing or what you're saying on the radio, then people aren't paying attention. So I know you guys are going to come with the heat.
but Perry,
that's not funny, man. That's you just blew it, man.
You just blew it. Okay,
Michelle, are you wearing your hat? You know the hat that you used to always wear in the studio, the Fidel Castro.
Oh, Perry asked me about this hat.
No, I'm not wearing.
Are you going to wear it when you come in here sometime?
I will if you want.
I want to see it.
That's usually like my bad hair day hat. Why are you telling people my secrets, Perry?
Because I know everything about you. When I come in there, we're going to do push-ups before.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to get. We need to get Perry in studio.
That's totally cool.
Yeah. Michelle is like the most. I don't know, what kind of buff girl I know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I hope you mean that as a compliment, Perry.
Oh, for sure, but
well,
I would never...
She knows I do.
Yeah, and I would never decapitate or, like, say you deserve to be decapitated. Can you please elaborate on the story before we let you go?
Yes, please.
You can't just say something
trainer,
like that.
There was a late, great Frank Tessaro at Woodbine, and I asked him a question, and he says, if you write anything about this in the paper, I will blank your head off, right?
Wow.
So it's a horse trainer. I thought you were talking
about... standing right there. He said, are you okay? I said, yeah. You know, if you're going to write something, you're going to stir up a little, you know, stuff, then people are going to get upset, and some people will threaten to maim or harm you physically.
Right.
So you weren't worried at all then?
Of course I was worried.
Here, Barry and I are thinking it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's, you said, a trainer. So
yeah,
we
thought you meant like a boxing trainer or something like that.
Yeah, so we were really scared for you, but then it's like
a
horse trainer.
My background is in horse racing. It was a thoroughbred trainer.
Yes.
A thoroughbred trainer.
And that'll do it for another episode of The Spin Podcast Edition for Monday, April the 1st. We want to thank you all for listening. And a reminder, you can join us each and every weekday on News Talk Saga 960 from 4 till 7 p.m. And that includes Let's Talk Baseball every weeknight between 6:30 and 7 on nights when the Blue Jays are playing in the evening. I'm Barry Davis. Thank you so much for listening and making us a part of your week.